Dhanatjayam Kaurava Sanya Sagaram Kritvataran Vatsaparam Svayaklava Translation. Taking the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, my grandfather, Arjuna, and others crossed the ocean of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, in which such commanders as Bhishma Dev resembled great fish that could have very easily swallowed them. By the mercy of Lord Krishna, my grandfathers crossed this ocean, which was very difficult to cross, as easily as one steps over the footprint of a cat. Because my mother surrendered unto Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the Lord, Sudarshan Chakra in hand, entered her womb and saved my body, the body of the last remaining descendant of the Kurus and the Pandavas, which was almost destroyed by the fiery weapon of Ashvatthama. Lord Sri Krishna, appearing within and outside of all materially embodied living beings, by his own potency in the form of eternal time, in the forms of eternal time, that is, as Paramatma and as Virat Rupa, gave liberation to everyone, either as cruel death or as life. Kindly enlighten me by describing his transcendental characteristics. Report. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Samashritaye Parapallavatplavam Mahatpadam Punya Yashomarare Bhavam Bhutir Vatsapadam Param Padam 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 Yadipadam Nate Sham. For one who has accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and is famous as Murari, or the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a cast of hoofprint. His goal is Param Padam, or Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. One who seeks shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna is immediately protected by the Lord. As the Lord promises in Bhagavad Gita, Antang, Antam Sarvapapapyo, Mukshayishnami Mahashukha. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. By taking shelter of Lord Krishna, one comes under the safest protection. Thus, when the Pandavas took shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, all of them were on the safe side of the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Pariksit Maharaj, therefore, felt obliged to think of Krishna in the last days of his life. This is the ideal result of Krishna consciousness, Ante Narayana Smriti. If at the time of death one can remember Krishna, one's life is successful. Pariksit Maharaj, therefore, because of his many obligations to Krishna, intelligently decided to think of Krishna constantly during the last days of his life. Krishna had saved the Pandavas, Maharaj Pariksit's grandfathers, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And Krishna had saved Maharaj Pariksit himself when he was attacked by the Brahmastra of Ashvatthama. Krishna acted as the friend and worshipful deity of the Pandava family. Moreover, apart from Lord Krishna's personal contact with the Pandavas, Krishna is the supersoul of all living entities, and he gives everyone liberation, even if one is not a pure devotee. Kamsa, for example, was not at all a devotee, yet Krishna, after killing him, gave him salvation. Krishna consciousness is beneficial to everyone, whether one is a pure devotee or a non-devotee. This is the glory of Krishna consciousness. Considering this, who will not take shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna? Krishna is described in this verse as Maya Manusha, because he descends exactly like a human being. He is not obliged to come here like Garmis or ordinary living beings. Rather, he appears by his own internal energy, Sambhavami Atma Maya, just to show favor to the fallen conditioned souls. Krishna is always situated in his original position as Satchit Ananda Vigraha, And anyone who renders service to him is also situated in his original spiritual identity. Sarupena vyavastiti. This is the highest perfection of human life. Enlighten me. And how does he want to be enlightened? He wants to be enlightened by hearing the transcendental characteristics of Krishna. There is a huge difference between understanding the Supreme Lord as Ishwar, controller of the cosmic manifestation, and understanding the Supreme Lord as the reservoir of all pleasure, the enjoyer of Vrindavan. Krishna Maharaj wants to hear all the transcendental characteristics. How the Lord rules with opulence, and also how the Lord surrenders to the sweetness of loving exchanges with his devotees. Transcendental characteristics mean that there are aspects and features of Krishna that make the devotee constantly remain absorbed in thoughts of Lord Krishna. You all know what it's like to constantly be in the thought of someone, thinking about what's that person doing. Maybe it's someone who's bothered you or is causing you distress. Still, you always think of that person. Oh, if that person does one more thing like that, that person's going to be there when I go there. Can't take it anymore. Stuff like that, always thinking of somebody in a negative way. But still, you're always thinking of it. That's like Kamsa. He always thought of Krishna, but in a negative way. He was negatively Krishna conscious. Whether he was eating or sleeping or walking around, he was always thinking, I must kill Krishna, although Krishna can't be killed. That was his paradox. He was just hung up like a computer on this point. I must kill Krishna, but Krishna can't be killed. But I must kill Krishna, but Krishna can't be killed. He was so locked into his mission, even though he knew it was impossible. So he was always thinking of Krishna, night and day. But it was negative. He was thinking, I have to kill Krishna. So he was Krishna conscious, but unfavorably. Still, that's an example of how strong absorption in Krishna can be, even by Krishna's enemies. But Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, asks us that we be favorably connected to Krishna. Still, even if you are attracted to Krishna unfavorably, there's benefit. As stated here, Lord Sri Krishna, appearing within and outside of all materially embodied living beings, by his own potency in the forms of eternal time, that is, as Paramatma and as Virat Rupa, gave liberation to everyone, either as cruel death or as life. All the soldiers who opposed Krishna and the Pandavas in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, if they die looking at the Lord's face, they receive promotion to Vaikuntha. Looking at the Lord's face, they had some appreciation of the Lord's beauty. Those who did not die in the presence of the Lord, they went to the heavenly planets. Everyone was benefited by Krishna's appearance. Even Kamsa was benefited. A deeply demoniac person. Still, because he was thinking how to kill Krishna, he got liberation from material existence. Anyway, who comes in contact with Krishna is benefited. The proof that Krishna is all attractive is that even the demons are attracted to him. aversion and attachment both indicate that there's some attraction. When you're attached to someone, you're always thinking of that person. And when you hate someone, you're always thinking of that person. Yes, as I said before, I'm sure you've all had that experience. Maybe you were working for some boss you couldn't stand, or there was someone at work who you couldn't tolerate, or someone at school. But you had to be in that situation at your job or at school. And so that person was there. It's always like that in the material world. You just can't get around it. So you just, it's ruined your life. In fact, sometimes you get so angry. What do you think? If that person would just disappear from this world, I'd be so happy. Everyone's been in situations like that. That shows you the negative power of absorption. That's what Krishna's enemies fear. They're always thinking of Krishna, but how to get rid of Krishna? Krishna benefits them, because they are Krishna conscious, but in the negative way. That's why in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni, he discusses the ferocious, intense absorption of Krishna's enemies, and says, if I had just a fraction of their absorption, my devotional life would be successful. This attitude of Narada Muni's shows how a devotee can appreciate everyone, even the demons. Narada Muni was appreciating the enemies of Krishna. Look at their absorption, look at their intensity. My intensity of devotional service is nothing compared to these demons. Let's see how intensely they hate Krishna. They're thinking of Krishna. If only I could have a drop of their intensity. He doesn't mean if only he could be an enemy of Krishna. He's meaning if only his positive or favorable Krishna consciousness could be as intense as the demon's negative Krishna consciousness. Somehow or other, however you're attached to Krishna, there'll be only benefit. Whether it's out of sneha, affection, maya, fear. Kama, sneha, maya, krodha. Or anger, krodha. You'll benefit. Even out of so-called lust, Krishna's girlfriends in Vrindavan, from the material point of view, it looked like they're attracted to Krishna by lust. But no. Had nothing to do with material lust. There was not one drop of material contamination, because they simply desired to please Krishna's senses. And they always said quite plainly, what can anyone do once having looked into the beauty of Krishna's face, having seen Krishna's smile, having heard Krishna's words? What can you do? There's no choice. You must be attracted. Well, who can blame us? Somehow or other, become absorbed in devotional service. Somehow or other, develop an attachment for Krishna. That is the purpose of Krishna consciousness. Of course, in Kali Yuga, in a time of such intense degradation, social chaos, personal turmoil, and personal disaster, the best way to take shelter of Krishna is to chant the holy name. For those of you who seriously take to chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna becomes revealed to you. Everything is given to you, how to serve the Lord better. We're always trying to maximize a person's absorption in Krishna consciousness. A devotee helps the general population by looking for ways that everyone can increase their absorption in Krishna. And that way the devotee is the best friend of everyone. Because Krishna is Suridam Sarvabhutanam, the friend of all living entities. When you serve Krishna, you also become the best friend of all living entities. Now what is Maharaj Prichit doing in this verse? We've discussed how he's asking Shukadeva Goswami, kindly enlighten me by describing his transcendental characteristics. He's asking for enlightenment. But he doesn't want impersonal understanding. He understands that that's not enlightenment, simply knowing about the Lord's impersonal feature. No, he wants to know about the transcendental personal characteristics of Krishna. And in this way, he's showing us what we should do. We should have a hunger to know about the transcendental characteristics of the Lord. Our whole life should be characterized by a deep fascination in Krishna. Who is Krishna? Why does he do the things he does? What kind of qualities does Krishna have? What about Krishna's form? How attractive does Krishna's form look? You're meant to think of these things. And that way Krishna becomes your beloved. In the beginning, you may require a little push. You require some exhortation. Yes. Make your life so that you're fascinated by Krishna. But gradually, the spontaneous nature of the relationship between living entity and Krishna takes over. Therefore, in the beginning, a smart person joyfully accepts devotional service under regulation. Just like a sick person who wants to get well, gratefully accepts the medicine. Knowing that by taking the medicine under regulation, you'll get better. Your natural health will revive. Everyone knows how to take medicine. The doctor says, okay, here it is in this bottle. Take 8 drops a day, 8 drops at a time, three times a day. Don't eat this kind of food. Don't eat that kind of food. It's like if you're taking homeopathic medicine, you can't have cloves or this or that or mint or whatever. You want to get well, you follow these rules and regulations. You ask yourself, how many of you ask yourself when you take medicine, do I feel like taking this? Does anyone here do that? No. You do it? You ask yourself, do you feel like taking it? No. The point is, you know you have to take the medicine according to rules and regulations if you're going to get well. That's the kind of attitude we need in the beginning about Krishna consciousness. Certain things I have to do whether I feel like it or not. And many have difficulty with this point because their lives have been so ruined by modern society. They've been brainwashed thinking, if I don't feel like doing something, I shouldn't do it. It's very injurious to do something that you don't feel like doing. Isn't that the mentality everyone's been given? The psychologist will tell you, you shouldn't repress yourself. The more you do what you feel, the more happy you'll be. Follow your heart, and then you'll be healthy and happy. But why should you follow your heart if it's polluted? Yes. When you are free from material contamination, we'll say follow your heart. That means you'll be following the dictation of super soul in your heart. But until you are purified, what is the use of following your heart? It's like saying, just follow the smell of the garbage. What is the use of that? Clean up your life, then you can start to think about following your heart. In this way, you can see that bhakti yoga requires humility. It's practicality. It's not anything far-fetched and artificially imposed. If you're sick, what is the use of deluding yourself into thinking that your normal instincts are present and you can follow them safely for your benefit? You can't. So purify your heart, then follow it. When the heart is purified, it is naturally attracted to Krishna. But in the beginning, we need to practice bhakti yoga under discipline. That means whether I feel like it or not, I do certain things. And you'll notice that your disease of material existence starts to become reduced. The fever of material desire starts to go down. Now, Prichit Maharaj is giving a list of many of the obligations he has towards Lord Krishna. That is the advantage of being Krishna's devotee. Krishna will arrange for every devotee, not just Prichit Maharaj, but even a neophyte devotee. Krishna will arrange that you feel some obligation to him because of how the Lord has reciprocated with you. So you have to be mindful of that, because the more you are conscious of how Krishna's reciprocated with you and given you what you don't deserve, then the more obligation you'll feel to the Lord. And the more obligation you feel to Krishna, then you'll be protected from feeling obligations to the illusory energy. Everyone has to feel some kind of obligation. Now just look at your life and see, are you feeling obligations simply to the illusory energy? Or what about obligations to Krishna, the source of everything? Here in Bhakti Yoga, we develop the sense of obligation to Krishna. In material life, everyone thinks, oh, I am free, I am independent. What do I need to feel bound by some duty to God? Meanwhile, they're completely bound by their senses, completely bound by the laws of material nature. When you go to the zoo, you look at the monkeys. They're jumping from tree to tree. I think in Wellington, there's an island with the monkeys on it. Yes. Yes. So you watch them. They think they're free, don't they? They're chattering away and swinging. You know, they have special ropes the monkeys swing on and jumping from tree to tree and making such a commotion. They're free. They're independent. Right? So when you look at the monkeys, you can go and look at those monkeys and think, what's the difference between me and them? They are free. Really? Is that the kind of freedom I want? They're just running around, just chattering away, and every time they feel like it, they can swing on the rope. Every time they feel like it, they can jump to the next tree. Please, huh? They're acting according to their heart. The monkeys are acting according to their intuition and their heart. Is that the kind of life you want? No, you understand. These monkeys are bound up. They're in monkey bodies. And not only are they in monkey bodies, but they're in the zoo. They can't get off that island. But I'm a human being. I'm free. When I walk down Courtney Place, you see it on Friday night? On Courtney Place, Friday, Saturday night, people, you know, they just, you know, they feel, oh, we're liberated. Friday night has come. Saturday night is here. We're free. He's lining up at the liquor shops, you know. Then watch for Monday morning. Have you done that? Done this study? You done that? Watch them Friday night, Saturday night. And then watch them Monday morning. What a difference. Where's the so-called freedom? Actually, they weren't free during the weekend. During the weekend, they were slaves to drugs, illicit sex. They were controlled by lust and illusion, false hopes. And then Monday morning comes, and then it's the hard struggle just to pay for their sense gratification. I've watched. I told you before how I would watch. When I was using the bus, I would just look out the window and see them trudging to work on Monday morning. The men and women had two different looks on their faces. The men were looking like totally just depleted and wasted and just, like drained. And the ladies were looking so grumpy and grouchy. And I began to observe, and I didn't understand why that's so. Why are the men looking so drained and wasted? Because they just, poured out their energies into illicit sex. So that, Monday morning comes around, they look white as sheets. And the ladies look so grouchy and irritable because, they've given themselves as sex objects to get something they wanted, and they're not happy after all that. They dallied and played and offered themselves as a sense object. And there's always the thought, what am I going to get by doing this? Some control, some manipulation, or even just some temporary happiness to feel desired. But Monday morning comes around, and they look so grouchy. Are you going to watch? Huh? You watch, sir? You see this? It's so grouchy. And the men are so, spaced out. But they got to buckle down. Monday comes, you gotta buckle down and get into it. Because Friday will come again. You have that expression here? Thank God it's Friday. Liberation, mukti, Friday. Reminds me of a popular blues song as a young person. They call it Stormy Monday, but Tuesday's just as bad. Wednesday's worse, and Thursday's oh so sad. Have you heard that song? Yeah. They call it Stormy Monday, you know, because you know you gotta go to work. Call it Stormy Monday, but Tuesday's just as bad. Wednesday's worse, and Thursday's oh so sad. But then the eagle flies on Friday. You never knew what that meant, did you? The song is from Chicago. So in Chicago at that time of that song, there was a cheap wine called Thunderbird. You're getting older, per course. Never get ladies? You never heard that song? But the eagle flies on Friday. That means, you know, Thunderbird wine. You know, real cheap, you know. Just load up on, you know, Thunderbird wine and get drunk. So the eagle flies on Friday. Saturday, I go out to play. Sunday, I get down on my knees and go to church and pray. This is the Sudra lifestyle. The labor lifestyle. Stormy Monday, Tuesday just as bad. Wednesday's worse, Thursday's also sad. The eagle flies on Friday. Time for intoxication. Saturday, I go out to play. Maybe some sports or a date or something like that. Sunday, I go to church and get on my knees and pray. Is that the kind of life you want? Of course, maybe you are more sophisticated than that. That's like a kind of a urban blue-collar worker blues song, but maybe you're more sophisticated. But still, it's basically the same thing. You don't go to church and pray on a Sunday. Your life is just a more sophisticated version of this diseased state. There are obligations in material life, and there are obligations in spiritual life. Krishna Maharaj is feeling obligations to Krishna. Look what Krishna has done. First of all, for my ancestors, my grandfathers, the Pandavas, they should not have won the battle of Kurukshetra. Materially, the Pandavas had an inferior side, not taking into account Krishna. That's why Duryodhana, in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, was feeling confident looking at his generals. And he said, yes, the generals I have, they're the greatest, the military strength of the Pandavas is inconsequential. Materially, he was right. But he didn't understand the spiritual potency. Therefore, there's no way he could have won. So from the material point of view, it was almost impossible for the Pandavas to have won the battle of Kurukshetra. But, as Krishna Maharaj is saying here, because his grandfathers, Arjuna and the other Pandavas, took shelter of the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, they crossed the ocean of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, in which the other military commanders on the opposing side, even including Bhishma Dev, they were like great Timangila fishes. You know what a Timangila fish is? It's a fish that can swallow whales. Oh, we've never seen that. Our scientists have never uncovered such fishes anywhere. You don't know what goes on in the depths of the ocean. You have no idea. It's because your scientists haven't found something that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So, Timangila fishes are described in the Shastra. They are so big, they can swallow whales. So that's what the opposing warriors in the battle of Kurukshetra, they're like Timangila fishes. Still, Krishna Maharaj is saying that his grandfathers became victorious by the mercy of Krishna. His grandfathers crossed over the ocean, which ordinarily is very difficult to cross. And they crossed over that ocean just as easily as someone steps over the footprint that a calf leaves. Therefore, he wants to hear about Krishna. Look what Krishna has done for my ancestors, my grandfathers. Then what about me and my mother and I? Who is Prichit Maharaj's mother? Uttara. He was the last heir to the throne in the Pandava line. So therefore Ashwatthama wanted to kill him while he was in the womb. You remember earlier in the first canto how Uttara was chased by the Brahmastra weapon fired by Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama was so demoniac and heartless that he wanted to kill a child in the womb. Because nowadays, that's not considered a big deal. What do the women say? It's my body, it's my choice. But in Vedic times, that was considered abominable, most abominable thing. And that's what Ashwatthama set out to do. He sent like a localized nuclear weapon. He sent it to seek out the unborn child in Uttara's womb, which is Prichit Maharaj. So you remember Uttara crying out for Krishna's protection. Pahi Pahi Mahayogin Deva Deva Jagatpate. O master of all mystics, greatest yogi, Lord of the demigods, Lord of the universe. I don't mind dying, but please protect my unborn child in my womb. That's Uttara's prayer to Krishna. And so, Krishna entered her womb and protected Prichit Maharaj, protected him from being destroyed by the Brahmastra weapon sent by Ashwatthama. So Prichit Maharaj is remembering that. Because my mother surrendered unto Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the Lord, with his Sudarshan chakra in hand, entered her womb and saved my body. The body of the last remaining descendant of the Kurus and the Pandavas. He's feeling this sense of obligation. But now you might say, well, that's Prichit Maharaj. Who are we to compare to that? To Prichit Maharaj's standard. That's true. Still, for each devotee, even a neophyte, Krishna has done things that you should feel obligated for. You're wondering, where's my love for Krishna? Where's my attachment to Krishna? First, why don't you look and see the obligations you have? How would you like to be in a relationship with someone who never felt any obligation to you for what you had done? Any of you tried to do that? Isn't it frustrating? You've sacrificed, you've done some things to please that person, but they feel no sense of obligation. All your friends will tell you, what are you doing? You know, you're just putting yourself up for being abused and exploited. Why is it that we don't feel any obligation to Krishna? Look what Krishna has done for us. We have no right to be approaching Krishna consciousness. No qualification, no background or pious activities. Yet, Krishna as Lord Chaitanya has freely given us the opportunity to be Krishna conscious. That's the first thing we should be amazed by. What am I doing chanting Hare Krishna? Coming from an atheistic background or an agnostic background, a sense gratifier from a young age, saturated with intoxication, mind deranged with lust, and now you're chanting Hare Krishna. That's the first obligation you should feel. And then, how is it that you have pushed aside your sinful activities and you're actually trying to develop Krishna consciousness? This opportunity makes you obligated because you don't deserve the opportunity. And then look and see how Krishna is giving you a taste for his service. Look and see how you are running around with great energy trying to satisfy the senses of the Lord. Just see, how has that happened? Just look and see how you've cleaned up your life. How you're trying to become respectable transcendentalists. Just see. That is all Krishna's mercy. And then as you go on in your devotional career, you'll be able to come up with specific incidents where you know Krishna has arranged for your advancement, for your protection. That is the glory of devotional service. As you go on through the years of bhakti, you'll be able to see how Krishna has personally arranged situations for you to protect you, to bring you forward, even during difficult times. And then you'll feel more and more indebted. And that feeling of indebtedness is wonderful, because then you want to reciprocate with Krishna. Just like Prichit Maharaj, he's feeling, these last 7 days of my life, I must absorb in Krishna, because look what Krishna's done for me and my family. He's feeling that obligation. Of course, I know that none of you here are thinking that you're going to die. That always happens to the other people. Right, Ashley, you don't think you're going to die. Right? But that is a fact of life. So, Antenarayana Smriti, the perfection of life is to think of the Lord at the time of death. If your whole life has been absorbed in obligations and commitments to Krishna, then it'll be easy to think of Krishna at the time of death. You're feeling grateful. That is a wonderful feeling, to feel grateful. I know you all have had some experience of being grateful to ordinary living beings, but what about being grateful to Krishna? You feel the sense of obligation, and therefore you have commitment. How do you get that sense of obligation? Maybe you're saying, I don't feel that, you know. I don't know, you know, I mean, I'm getting up in the morning, I'm chanting, I'm doing a bit of service because everybody else does it around me. You know, I got nothing better to do right now, and I agree I did make a bit of a mess of myself in my material life. But you have to feel this heartfelt obligation to Krishna. I don't know. Well, you should take the situation in hand and learn how to act in such a way that you'll see your obligations to Krishna. Each devotee is an individual, and it is a fact that the Lord will give you individual experiences so that you can see your sense of obligation and deepen your commitment. You'll be able to see how ordinarily you should have been overcome by some obstacle in spiritual life, but you sailed through, even though it was very difficult. Just by your sincerity and your attachment to following Krishna's instructions. When you see a life history of that kind of thing, then you become more and more bound in obligation to Krishna. Then your life is successful. That means we need to arrange our life so that we have the opportunity to feel indebted to Krishna. Once Prabhupada explained to us that you can never repay the debt to the spiritual master, but the sincere disciple always tries to repay, even though you can never repay. So this is the system of parampara. Each link in the parampara is feeling this impossible debt to repay. The more you feel that indebtedness, the more you'll remain true to the path of bhakti and throughout the trials and tribulations that are normal in material life, you'll make spiritual advancement. And to feel indebted, to feel obligation, is a personal thing. And Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So just like Prichit Maharaj has his list of why he's feeling obligated, similarly we should have our own list. You remember Kunti Devi's list she submitted in the first canto? My dear Lord, you saved us from a poisoned cake, from a house made of shellac that was to be set on fire. You saved us from the man-eating rakshasas. You saved us from the battle Kurukshetra. Get a whole list you can present to Krishna. I said, really? You should have your list too? Just think about it. What you should have been had you not come to Krishna consciousness. No one can say, oh, I don't know, Krishna, I don't feel that Krishna's done anything for me. No one can say that. Just the fact that you're practicing Krishna consciousness, that shouldn't have happened. But Krishna, through Lord Chaitanya, has arranged that it happened. And not only that, for sure you're going to get specific incidents in your life in which you can see that Krishna's protecting you, Krishna's nourishing you. So we want everyone to have that opportunity. We don't want theoretical religious believers. We want you to have your list, just like Krishna Maharaj. And that list will obligate you personally. Let me reciprocate with Krishna. Because look what Krishna has done for me. So now, because of those obligations, Prithu Maharaj is saying, please enlighten me, Shukadeva Goswami, by describing the Lord's transcendental characteristics. Because I've been rescued, my ancestors have been rescued by the boat of Krishna's lotus feet. That boat of Krishna's lotus feet takes you across the ocean of material suffering. You want to get to the other side of this impossible material existence. You can't stop the miseries in material existence. You can't erase them. You want to get to the other side. So you take the boat of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. And remember, Krishna is so attractive that even his enemies are attracted to him. Even his enemies are Krishna conscious, although it's unfavorable. Any questions? What does Krishna say? Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tattva. Tattva means to know in truth. To understand that Krishna, when he comes, although he's not a kriti, he looks like a human being, he's not a human being. To understand janma karma chame divyam, as you said, that his janma, his appearance in this world, his karma, his activities are divya, divine. Have nothing to do with material nature. That's all. When you can understand Krishna's divine appearance and activities, then when you think of Krishna, you'll think of Krishna properly. You'll know Krishna is non-material. He comes in his original Satchitananda form, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So dedicate your life to understanding the transcendental characteristics of Krishna and teach others to do the same. Ordinarily, you shouldn't be understanding these things. Knowledge of Krishna is the last stage in enlightenment. You understand first Brahman realization, the impersonal effulgence of the Lord. Then you understand Paramatma, super soul in everyone's heart. Rare it is the person who makes it to Bhagavan realization, understanding the personality of Godhead. But by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, Bhagavan realization is being distributed everywhere. If you understand Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically you have Brahman and Paramatma realization. That easy because of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So that's all you have to do. Evam yo veti tattva. Understand in truth. the appearance and activities of Krishna. Can you reciprocate with Krishna through devotional service? Arrange your life so that you are, so you can develop attachment to the holy name. Put your heart into your chanting. Put your heart into your service. You know how to put your heart into something? Don't blame Krishna for the hurts and pains we felt in material life. That's our problem. Krishna has never done anything to hurt us. You'll see that through the most difficult moments, Krishna is still there. Nourishing your heart. Become eager and greedy for devotional service. Not be greedy. Just stop your mouth. Just like with Dina Dayala's pious me. I really wanted to be greedy, but I restrained myself. I want to eat more than one piece. So finally I compromised with myself. I said, I just can't take the rest of the pie away. Today I'm meditating on it. But you probably would have finished the whole thing, right? Right? Yeah. So that's how you approach devotional service all day. Just pile it in. So your cheeks bulge. You already eaten like that? Like, huh? Yes, do like that. Have a good time. Right? Make life so such a bore and a drag. Who says you have to be sad and miserable? Who told you that? Okay, so many things have happened to all of us in our material life. All right, now move on. Pack yourself with hearing and chanting about Krishna and devotional service to Krishna. Let's go on a binge, have a good time. You gotta go on a binge? And now's the time we're going out of hinge. Make the basis of the binge hearing and chanting about Krishna, and then absorb your senses in Krishna's service. Do that. You become more enthusiastic. And when I see you more enthusiastic, I also become more enthusiastic. This is why all the devotees feed off of each other. Then you'll get to the state of, you'll get to the level of, even when there are difficult circumstances, you'll still go on serving Krishna. That's the real test, but you have to prepare for that. This world is naturally a difficult place. We don't know that now, to find out in the future. That's not Krishna's fault. You chose to come here. Krishna's giving you the means to get out. So first, be enthusiastic. Be very desirous of serving Krishna. And then you'll develop the determination that will carry you through any difficult circumstances that this world offers. The first difficulty is that you have a material body. The second difficulty is that material body is living in the material world. Don't blame Krishna for that. In fact, what Krishna has done is minimize the sinful reactions that we should be getting. So much so that if you cut your finger, you should know that normally you should have lost your head, according to your karma. So don't blame Krishna when there's some tough things in this world. Actually, it's the reverse. Krishna has minimized what we deserve, because we've taken to devotional service. That's why he says in Bhagavad Gita, Alam tam sarva bhavyo moksha ishami mashita. I'll take care of your sinful reactions, you don't worry. Krishna gives you just enough of an equivalent of your sinful reactions so that you don't forget the realities of material life. It's not actually karma, it's something that resembles karma, because it's personally dispensed by Krishna, not the laws of nature. For devotees, it's personally dispensed by Krishna. He gives you just a little equivalent. But actually, you deserve horrors. We all deserve horrors. That is the truth of living in this world. Why do you go on book distribution? No, you want to make them devotees. Krishna says this message cannot be explained to those who are not austere, to those who are envious. That means everybody these days. So we're going to talk about what we need to do then. So the devotee understands Krishna's purpose and says, okay, Krishna said, don't talk this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to anyone who's not a devotee. Okay, that means I have to make people devotees so they can hear. You understand? Now first you have to make yourself a devotee. You can't say you're not devoted to anything. So you have to look in your life and see, what am I really devoted to? And what comes out number one? What comes out number one? Yeah, well, in general. And what does that mean? That's right. It's quite an enlightening experience to map out your life and see how you're really a devotee of your senses. You try it sometime, psychological analysis. How this sense I'm dedicated to, that sense I'm dedicated to. How I surrender to this sense, how I surrender to that sense. That's what we mean by dedicated to myself. Now, change it to be dedicated to Krishna's senses. But you have to find out about Krishna in order to be dedicated to his senses. And what's so special about Krishna's senses? That you have to find out. What's in it for you to be dedicated to Krishna's senses? That's what you want to know. We talked about that Sunday night. Everybody is serving senses. You're never going to be able to get away from that. So find the best senses to serve. That should be your mission. Right? That mission statement for your life. I must find the best senses to serve. That is Krishna consciousness. We are not against sense gratification. We just want to find the right guy. We want to find the right senses to serve. Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, is about sense gratification, but for Krishna's senses. But then you have to understand your relationship with Krishna, otherwise you'll think, well, so what if Krishna gets sense gratification? What about me? What does that do for me? Anything else? Yes. What do you mean by that specifically? You have big debts?
You might buy 5 debts.
Oh, well then. Sounds like you need some management help. Having money without having so much intelligence is not so good. Yeah. If you have an excess of money that you more than what you need to live day by day, then let them use it here at the Gaur Yoga Center for helping so many people. Why just fritter away whatever wealth is in your possession? Why not have it used so that others can receive the supreme benefit? Otherwise, by wasting money, you get a reaction. It's like I told you on, was it Sunday, about the note taker I had. I had to offload it real quick, otherwise I get a reaction. I bought something with Krishna's money and I'm not using it. How old are you? First, we have to talk about what are your goals? What do you need? What you need is preparation for becoming engaged in devotional service. And you need engagement in devotional service. You need the preparation and the engagement. You're 21. Let's say you do become married in the future. You've got some time, you know. Give yourself a break. Give yourself a few years of, you know, fresh air, you know. There'll be time to, you know, accept those burdens. Don't worry. There'll be time coming for accepting those anxieties if that's what you want. When you say, well, give yourself a break. He's only 21, right? Yes. Those days will come if that's what you want. But meanwhile, you know, just learn how to master yourself and your senses. What about that kind of investment? What do you think? What about investing in yourself in terms of developing your personal qualities? Developing more generosity. Okay. You can donate for increasing the spreading of Krishna consciousness. You can help the center here. You can help keeping me traveling, you know. Hopefully I'm doing some good. That's the best thing to do. Expand into next door, getting the place next door. So there's more room. That's something that could happen. Make a bigger place. So more people can be accommodated comfortably. More people can be rescued from the hells of Kali Yuga. You want to be taken care of spiritually. That is your goal. That we can arrange. As for material support for the future, you're just 21. You have many years before, you know, dealing with that reality. Anything else? Yes?
Seems like originally one spoke Sanskrit.
Hmm?
Originally one spoke Sanskrit.
Where?
In India?
Originally? How originally? how far in the past are you going?
Yeah. Okay, I'll guess the question. How is it with Shankar?
Is this a spiritual question or a linguistic science?
Well, it seems like that if one practices the Ayurveda, one master is in India, but it seems like
Most people came from India?
No.
If you read the book I wrote, Searching for Vedic India, you'll get an overview of all these kind of issues. I mean, originally, what people and where? What planet? Why does the Earth planet? Bhagavatam is an interplanetary book. But we always think of things just in terms of the Earth planet. Prichard Maharaj is asking questions to Shukadev Goswami. Who is in the audience? Not just Earthlings. They're representatives of all different planets are there. They come because they know Bhagavatam is going to be spoken. Yet, when we approach Bhagavatam, we think, well, this is a Earth book, you know, based in India. Not exactly so. Then you've got Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What does he have to do with Earth? I understand what you're trying to say, but things are radically different from our conceptions of what history is. Just like if you didn't know anything about New Zealand history, you'd think the Europeans have always been here. So you say, well, originally, you know, the original tongue of New Zealand is English. And immediately everybody would say, you don't know the history. But look around, so everyone speaks English, you know. Got a few people who speak some other languages, you know. Some Asians, you know. Maoris, you know. But obviously, the English has always been the main thing. So much has gone on in this world that is beyond the range of the senses of contemporary people. You know, most people today, the majority of them don't even understand what their governments are up to. What those people understand the mysteries of antiquity. You realize that most people today don't even realize, don't even understand what their governments are up to. Who here knows all the things going on in the beehive and all the scams and all the... Yeah, you don't know. So what's to speak of understanding the mysteries of the ancient past? Sunday, I was speaking, I think it was Sunday, I was explaining one statistic I had read, that for a New Zealand woman who attends either the Polytech or university, it takes her on the average 28 years to pay her debts back. Most of you didn't know that. 28 years. There's freedom for you. Here's the woman's liberation.
28 years.
Someone smart looks at the bottom line. It's equal rights. In fact, in New Zealand, it's known as more than equal rights. The ladies control the government. But what happens when it's time to pay their debts? Twice as long as the men to pay their debts. It's a pretty good way of controlling society, isn't it? Yeah, you can have all the top posts, you're liberated, you're the controllers, but we have no time to pay the bills. That's pretty smart, isn't it? You can have all the titles, you can feel you're free, but when it comes time to pay, you're a debtor.
I worry that it takes 28 years to pay back your debts. You're free, you're equal, you're more than equal. Is the irony controlled?
get into debt for 28 years, take your birth control pills, take your, what do you call them, synthetic hormone replacement. That's the latest scam. It's just been uncovered. People don't even know what their own governments are up to. But to speak of what happened thousands of years ago in the past. That's right. Desire is the subtlest thing. Because of desire, you perform activities and you get a reaction. Yes, that's why it's a loop. It's a trap. Your material identity now is a product of your past actions. And with the material identity you have now, you're digging a hole further by causing future reactions. So this way the past, the present, and the future are linked. How do you get out of this mess? What you do now is conditioned by what you did in the past. So how to break free? If you want to break free from your conditioned past, which makes a conditioned present and a conditioned future, what are you going to do? How do you get out of this loop? It's like a cat chasing its tail. I want to act, but I can't act without my past baggage. And because I can't act without dragging in my past baggage, my future becomes conditioned by the past. That's why you're called conditioned soul. Subject to conditions. Now what are you going to do about that? Change your life? Yes, if you desire what Krishna desires, then you'll become free. That's the whole purpose of Bhakti Yoga, to teach you how to desire what Krishna desires. That is liberation. And you don't have to have 28 years of debt in order to learn about that liberation. All right, now we're going to do a little exercise. That's why you have pens and paper. We all know that everyone likes to feel valued by others. Does anyone here doesn't like to feel valued by others? Need a paper one? Just let me know first before starting. Is there anyone here doesn't like to feel valued by others? You don't like to feel valued by others? Huh? Can't hear you. Still, you may develop pride, you may not, but you like to be valued by others, right? Okay. Don't have to get on these artificial repression trips. No one should value me because I become proud. Everyone feels encouraged when others value them. It's a very important part of life here that you feel valued by others, isn't it? Isn't that so, Mark? You want to feel others value. Yeah, Mark, he's a good guy. I mean, you know, he's working to get over his impediments. He's coming to deal with himself, right? You want to feel that, that others feel that, right? Yeah, it's natural. Asha, don't you want to feel valued by others? Of course. And everyone says, oh, Asha, please stay here. Even if you're thinking, I don't know, still you're happy that people value you, right? Yes. They see value in me. They want me to be here. In all of our relationships, no matter what type, we want to feel valued by others. Not simply husband and wife, So if you're around, you want to feel valued by your husband, right?
Yeah.
Of course. Otherwise, it's all hell breaks loose, right? That's not only in married relationships, any kind of relationship. You want to feel that you're valued. In this way, you feel inspired to act when you feel valued. Okay. Now, let's go over the different ways that you can feel valued by others. Have you ever thought that there are different ways? One way is just someone looking in your eyes, eye to eye contact, you feel, oh, you acknowledge I exist. Yes? You feel about me enough to look into my eyes. That's just one way, though. And everyone has different ways. Another way, words of support or concern. Yes? Is this a way you feel bad? Someone speaks words that show they're concerned about you and they want to give you words of support. What's another way? Oh, that someone listens to you and you feel valued. That person's listening. Not only very important in marriages, it's important in any relationship that you want to feel that the person is listening to you. Sometimes you feel valued just by persons encouraging you to speak up. Did you ever think about that? Like if I say, Sue, what do you think?
Oh, they know I exist, they know I'm alive.
Right? That is natural, right? Even if you don't have anything to say or you're shy to say, it's still the fact that, what do you think?
Oh, you know I'm alive.
That's natural. For others, you feel valued if someone holds you accountable for doing your best. That makes you really feel good. You feel valued by others because you're held accountable. Are you doing your best? You can do better. Different for different people, but these are all different ways that persons feel valued. Or maybe someone takes an interest in not so much what you think, but what you feel. Many persons place feelings as more important than thoughts. They value their feelings more than their thoughts, so therefore if you ask them how you feel about something, then, oh, they feel very valued. Like I was talking to Chloe, I think yesterday or the day before, I said, I know. When you look at the world, you just see colors and feelings. I said, right. You don't see any logic. Right. The whole world is just a swirling mass of emotions and colors. That's the way artists see things. No logic, no structure. Just feelings and colors. So therefore, when you're giving to someone like Chloe, she'll value it more. Instead of asking, what do you think? This is actually what do I think? Ask, what do you feel? Ah, oh, there's another question. It's different for different persons. Still, everyone wants to be valued. Or someone else wants to be recognized or rewarded for their efforts in a special way. So what I want you to assimilate is this point that everyone wants to feel valued by others. And that is a important part of our Krishna conscious treatment of other persons. To value their presence. To show that we value their presence. But the mystery is that people feel valued in different ways. And what usually happens is you try to impose your own concept of how someone should feel valued upon that person. Maybe some of you have that experience. You've got to actually take the time to figure out how different persons want to feel valued. and then you can properly add value to their life. Well, this is all part of being personal. This is a part of being effective in personal relationships. Not everyone feels valued in the same way. So now, I want you to do an exercise. How many papers do you have? One. Okay, you should have two. Anyway, for now, just turn it tear it in half. And write down maximum of four ways that you like to feel valued by others. Don't put your name on it.